Hi, and welcome to Only the Avatar.
An Avatar, the Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm Veda.
And I'm Christina, and you're listening to Season 3, Episode 12, The Western Air Temple.
Hello, hello. How was your week? What's going on?
It's been okay. Just, I'm buying a house, so I've been kind of stressed about that and trying to figure all that stuff out. Like, it's really hard to be an adult. There's, like, a lot of things to do.
I know. And I know, like, all the Gen Zs who listen to us will be like, ew, she said adulting, but I can't help it.
But soon enough, they'll be adulting too. I'm sorry. Give it 5 years. You'll be adulting too. Let me tell you.
And it is hard. Paperwork is really stressful. It is extremely stressful. We don't talk about it enough. Ban paperwork. Like, if I run for office, I'm banning it.
I'm That's my platform. Ban paperwork.
It actually stresses me out. Like, there are so many things that I can do fearlessly. You know, like, I don't give a shit. I'll go do it. I don't care. I'll do it. But give me paperwork or something that needs to be signed and read, and like suddenly I freeze up. I don't know what's coming, gonna happen. I don't know. I have a meltdown. So it was just not, you know, it's hard. It's hard work, but I'm excited for you. It's gonna be so nice to have a garden.
I know. We have like, we literally have a vineyard kind of thing. We have this like these grapes. We have this like, I don't know. We bought the house from these very Italian people that have like these grape vineyard things, and then there's literally like racks next to the staircase in the basement where they used to hang their dried salami and mozzarella and stuff like that.
Well, please, I hope you start making mozzarella, and I hope you I hope you're making wine. And also, like, I was at my sister's this weekend, who lives in Hoedunk, Pennsylvania. There's nothing around there. Like, I get my country vibes going there, you know. And they were growing kale in her yard, and just walking out, grabbing some fresh kale for my salad. Like, is she a country bitch? I think she is.
No, my mom, that was the first thing. My mom loves gardening, and she saw our yard that we're going to have. And she's like, oh, you need to have this kind of garden. You have to do this kind of garden.
Please,
and
I'm some veggies.
But my dad is straight up just like, we have a house. Why don't you do this in our house? She goes, no. They need all this stuff. I'm like, wait, what? Maybe we could have like a tomato garden, because there is a room in the basement as well. That was where the family kept like all their tomato sauces.
Like, are you going to start canning now? Are you going to do a Sunday sauce? Like, you're not Italian. Like, are you just
just call me Christina O'Handalia. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
So I saw this book that was like, it's basically a guide from the 1950s of how to dress as a wife and how to be a homemaker. And like, I'm gonna get you this book.
No, I don't, not like going back to this. Just because I'm buying a house does not mean I'm going back to societal standards from the 1950s. Okay.
But listen, there's some really good homemaking advice in this book. And I kind of was like, I love the care at how she dressed. I mean, it's problematic, but it's still kind of funny to read. It is a little, anyway. Speaking of problematic things, I finished the second season of Never Have I Ever, Mindy Kaling's show. And
did you like it?
I mean, I liked the show. Like, I enjoyed watching it. I probably ranted about season one when we first started this podcast, because like, I just wish it was set in the 80s. I think it's just really awkward set now. And I have, like, the dialogue is really weird. But is it a fun, relaxing show to watch in the background? Sure. Am I happy to see a rage-filled Indian girl character? Yes, as also a rage-filled character who is 30 and still filled with rage. So it's, you know,
Why should it have been set in the 80s?
I just think that the issues, especially in season one, that the character goes through, like the identity stuff and like things like that, it feels very 1980s. I don't think it's like a 2020 internal conflict for like a child of immigrant, you know, and especially like the way that the characters are, they seem so 80s to me. I'm like, I think the show would have been stronger, especially if she was going to take autobiographical elements, if it was set in the 80s, or if she talked to more teens that are now. Like, it just seems very dated in a lot of things. Also, I hate the over-the-top Indian accents. I hated the arranged marriage thing with the sister. Some of the stuff I'm just like, what is this? Like, when they speak Tamil, too, it's like the accent's weird. Like, get Tamil actors. You know what I mean? Like, there's just like a lot mm-hmm. of like issues I have with the show.
Little things. I don't think it was – do you think it's – you think it's set in the 80s just because, like, you don't think that people of that generation have those issues? But, like
– I think they do, but it's different. Because, it's different. Yeah. Like, even for – okay, like, when I – like, I was in a writing group right – like, after I graduated from college. And it was an Asian American writer group. And it was really cool because I got to meet people 10 years older. I got to meet, like, Asian and Indian people, like, South Asian – and East Asian people who grew up in the city, and like we grew up in the suburbs, right? And like our experiences were so different, like, because mm-hmm. for us, they grew up with so many more Asian and like Black and brown people in their classes while we didn't. And like that mm-hmm. kind of plays into how, you know, we grew up, how we see ourselves, like value system, beauty standards, like theirs was so different. But like the people who, you know, came of age right after 9/11, like their experiences were like their if you watch Indian American movies from the 90s, there's like some there's a few famous ones, like American Born Confused. I think I have to look up the names of these. They are dealing with these identity conflicts of like I want to be more white, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the or like completely rejecting their Indian culture and seeing it as like something weird or bad. And I think that has become less because there's more Indian people in the country in general, especially in Southern California, or like where she's growing up. There's way more Indian people. Like mm-hmm. it's just not as common as being the only one in your school or town. And like there's more Indian culture in like TV, pop culture, there's things to relate to. It's just, you might have different levels of feeling comfortable and like dealing with your identity, but I think it's just, it just feels very dated. The conflicts feel yeah. very dated.
I was thinking when like you said that, I was like, well, maybe it's, we only feel like it's dated because like we grew up in a very Indian town and we were surrounded no, really close to other places, but like she seems to be the only one to be in that situation. So maybe
know.
It's different based off of that. And that's why, because if she says in the show she was the only Indian person in the school besides that one other girl, of course she's going to have a different
I like
perspective
the conflict.
Than like us.
You know? I mean, I feel like I definitely still had issues. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, like,
But like when I grew up, like I was basically, there was only two Indian people in my whole elementary school. Do you know what I mean? That's still not a lot of people. It's mm-hmm. also just like also in like TV and media and things like that. Like it's definitely expanded. Thank God, you know, like, and it's also just the types of, I don't want to get into this now, but it's like a pretty complex situation. And the way, and it feels like if you are telling an autobiographical story, she's in her 40s. She's telling a story of someone who came of age in the 70s and 80s, which is a completely different experience than if your parents come to India in 2000. Like in the show, her parents came from India in 2000. It's already so – it's a much more global way of growing up. Like if your parents came in the 70s, they are a very different type of people who were the one of the first like immigrants to come in from India after like – you know, like it was opened up again. There were like coming.
Were we talking about this too? Of like America is basically like a time capsule of when your parents immigrated to this country, right?
No, but
so like, it's basically the thought process of like say if you're Irish Catholic, right? Like a lot of people who are Irish Catholic, whose like parent great grandparents like immigrated here into the 1900s, those people are still because like I'm Irish Catholic, like those people are still very like Irish Catholic. They still believe in like the like, you know, they go to Catholic school, they're very Catholic. But you go to Ireland, there no one gives a crap about religion for the most part unless it's dealing with like English conflicts, you know what I mean? So it's like a time capsule like, of those standards, those practices that they had in the 1900s have been passed down. And even as we were talking about like my very Italian household, like a lot of people who immigrated from like Sicily in Italy that came over to the United States during that time, they preserved their culture. So that's why they say prosciutto and mozzarella instead of mozzarella or prosciutto. Yeah,
very Sicilian the way that they talk,
because it's one is very Sicilian, but that was before they even like had like a national language of Italian. It was very like regionalized, and they wanted to keep their culture because they were in America and they could lose it so quickly, and it stayed so strong in that sense because America is that time capsule of like you come over from another country, you immigrate here, you want to preserve your culture, but that culture is stayed the same while back in the homeland things have grown and changed so much. So this is like a basically like what you're talking about is like the time capsule is wrong in say never have I ever.
Yes, because like the way that the parent, and that's why the other surrounding characters come off as caricatures, because she's basing it off of her parents who came in the 70s. People who came in the 2000s, like immigrated to this country in the 2000s, are very, very different than the people who immigrated in the 70s. So anyway, there's like, there's a lot of weird, I appreciate what she's doing. I think the dialogue could be better. I think the show in general could be better. I'm just holding it up to a higher standard. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, but it's good to have like different ranges of different, like we have like this kind of show, but then we can have a highbrow show that's, about
highbrow like, if you,
but like there's that, it's just like we need more different kinds of voices, and this shouldn't be the one show about Indian culture. We should have multiple shows about Indian culture. We should have multiple shows about like the Asian American,
I just wish it was a better
life
show
and things like that.
But there's a lot of things I enjoyed about it. Like I was laughing at some of the jokes. I liked that she's like an unlikable character. I mostly liked Common. Like, he's so hot. Like, I can't. I think he's so attractive.
I thought it was very predictable. Like, I knew exactly that they were going to get together, all this stuff. But, like, it's not meant to be, like, this show that's going to win, like, an Emmy or, or Golden Globe. Like, it's supposed to be a fun show. And I personally think they got the job done. I really enjoyed the show.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed, especially the second season. Like, I was laughing out loud multiple parts. And, like, I don't know. I like that she got two boyfriends. Like, okay.
Yeah, good for her.
If you're going to do a visual comments, you know, show, like, yes, bring on the two men.
I like how she's not like a typical like Indian like girl that we stereotype, like, you know, the stereotypical type. So I like that
she's angry, and I like that she's kind of messy, and, you know, it's good to have a character like that, even though sometimes I'm like, your behavior is so bad. You're such a dick. Like, what are
She's very unlikable at certain parts. But can I talk about, I know we're kind of going over, sorry, audience, skip ahead if you want to listen to the show, but I watched Central Park. Have you watched that show? It has to be on your radar. It's so good. It's on Apple TV, and it's a musical cartoon. So it combines like two of my favorite things, cartoons and musicals. Has a lot of the cast from Hamilton. So Leslie Odom Jr. Plays the dad. The daughter is played by a character from Hamilton. David Diggs is in it. And it's such a great show. And the last episode that they just premiered, so they have new episodes every Friday, was so powerful and moving. And the music, it was a song about like a moment forever ago, how one person can make such a big impact in your life. And there's like, at the end of the episode, it was a similar type of scene where you would see in the beginning of Up. Did you watch Up?
Yes.
That movie, those first 10 minutes make you want to cry. Something similar happens in the show, spoiler alert, but like, oh my God, I was just tears running down my eyes listening, watching it. There was no dialogue. It was just all music, and the way they played it out, it was absolutely beautiful. Highly recommend it. Please watch it.
I need to get a login.
Yeah. Call me. Do you want to jump into the episode
now?
Let's
do it. Let's do it.
So, as we saw in the last episode, Day of Black Sun, things kind of hit the fan for the gang, and they're heading now to the Western Air Temple, but they have someone trailing them, and that's Zuko. So, Zuko's following the gang over to the Western Air Temple to basically convince the Avatar, you know, Aang, Sokka, Katara, and Toph that he's destined to be the firebending master that Aang needs to save the world. And he tries to tell the gang that he's the one, but they really aren't that convinced. There's just like way too much bad blood between Zuko and the rest of the group. And really the only person that's close to being convinced is Toph, right? So Toph goes over to Zuko to try to like maybe mend that bridge. But by accident, Zuko accidentally burns Toph's feet instead. Oh, why is Zuko so bad at being good? But that makes it even harder for Zuko to get accepted into the group.
Zuko wasn't the only one who followed them to the air temple. Combustion Man is back and following them as well. He begins to attack, and Zuko is able to defeat him, thankfully. And this action makes the gang reconsider if Zuko should join the group. And also, it's Zuko sincerely apologizes and to Aang, and they kind of have a very touching conversation. And in the apology, this is just, it takes so much strength for Zuko to do this. He expresses that the firebending incident that he had with Toph was an accident, and fire is a dangerous element, and it needs to be controlled. And that response reminds Aang of his own initial attempts of learning firebending when he accidentally burnt Katara. So that makes him realize, like, okay, wow, you are actually meant to be my teacher because you understood my reservations with this element. And Aang accepts him as a teacher. The gang also slowly follows suit. But we end with the final scene where Katara shows her tough girl attitude, and she really comes up to Zuko, gets in his face, and basically threatens him and is like, if you do one thing, if you fall back one time, if you like mess up, and we know, we both know you've slipped in the past and made the wrong choice, I will end you. Like, yeah. Whoa, extremely aggressive.
Great episode, though. I love this episode.
I do too.
During that scene, though, with Katara, I was like, wow, she has grown so much as a character. Because think about her in the very first like episode where she's still naive, she's so young. Hearing her talk to Zuko like that, I was taken aback because I was like, wow, she's a grown up. She knows what's up. You know what I mean? She's a little jaded, but she's not that naive little girl we saw in season one.
She is not naive. And it kind of gave me Azula vibes a little bit because, you know, in the episode where Zuko was kind of practicing a few times of how he would, and I love these moments, especially the cut of them being like, oh, I guess who's going to be around to teach us firebending? And then it cuts to Zuko practicing his apology to a frog who is his companion in this episode.
But he really needed Iroh.
I know. But he tries to like, it's so cute because I feel like he's trying to talk himself down. You can see how much he's grown in this episode where he like tries to give advice from the perspective of Iroh, and then he laughs and is like, I don't even understand what Iroh means when I'm being Iroh. And then he tries to give advice from Azula's perspective, and he was just like, wow, I guess I'm bad at impressions. But
he's not good with words, let's be honest. He's not the sharpest tool in the shed, but we still love him.
I don't think he's emotionally stunted, obviously. Like, he's had so many issues, and I love that Toph also says that in this episode where she's like, he's had so much trauma, like, considering the family that he comes from, like, he's a good guy.
And she gets it too. I think there are a lot of reasons why Toph is the one who is like, you know what, maybe we should bring him into the group, because one, she comes from a similar family that Zuko came from, where it was like a lot of money, very dysfunctional. So the fact that he is making that choice now to be like, hey, I've done wrong and I want to, like, I'm sorry and I want to help you guys, like, that means a lot, because he could have turned out a lot worse. Like, we see Azula. She also wasn't there during the like the brutality of Zuko basically in season one, where it was season one was when Zuko was like really trying to attack them. There are only a couple of fights in season two that Toph witnessed.
See him
right
on that side, like,
yeah. And then also, she could tell by his heartbeat, like, that little tidbit we got in season two. Oh, I could tell when people lie. Like, she knows he's not lying. She knows he's being sincere. And she could say that to the gang, and they're like, whatever, he still sucks. And also because, I guess, Azula proved them wrong with the lie last week too.
I know. And so they have a lot of, obviously, they don't trust him. Like, throughout this episode, I love the dialogue through this episode where they keep referencing like all the different fights that they've had, all the issues that they've had. Like, you know that they've been holding this in for a long time. Like, they have a list of grievances against this man. But
They're trying to pick a fight with him. They want to figure out a way to actually fight him, I think. My favorite part was when they were like going back to like just past things. They're like, oh, like, how are we going to find a firebending master? Oh, where's Zhang Zhang? And Toph is like, who's Zhang? If it's important, I'll figure it out. Like, I just thought that was so funny. We don't have to go into this. We're cut for time. We're just going to put that line in instead.
But the two moments that I loved of Zuko defending himself, and it's also a reminder to the audience that he was like, I freed Appa, and we see that Appa remembers that about him, and it's like, you know, licking him and stuff. And then later on, Aang was like, Zuko freed me, like, Zuko saved me, and Zuko references that moment too, being like, you once said that we could be friends.
Yeah, or like, you know, I have good in me. I think mm-hmm. that's a line that he said.
So
I
really powerful.
Like that. He really messed it up, though, when he was like, I'm sorry I did this, this, and I'm sorry I sent that assassin to you guys. And he, I was like, oh, Zuko, no, don't mention the assassin. They don't know.
Oh, my God, he's so – but also, like, how scary is this? You know what I mean? Like, you know you've been a dick, and you have to sincerely apologize. Like, it is very hard to have a real apology like this. And I feel like mm-hmm. we've seen so many bad apologies through years of, like – bad influencers, YouTubers trying not to get canceled.
People
like
in your life.
Like, yes. You know what I mean?
It's hard to convey that, especially, I think, especially from like Atara's perspective, where she was like, he was genuine with me and then he turned his back on us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I really believed him. And if maybe that scene didn't happen, I think that's the only reason why Katara is so mad at him, because she was vulnerable with him and then he was vulnerable with her and then he chose the wrong side. You know what I mean? If that scene didn't happen, I don't think she'd be as mean to
Zuko. I agree, because it's like she trusted him, you know, mm-hmm. and it's – I think it's like she's seen him slip up and it's very hard to regain someone's trust. Like if they don't know anything yeah. about you – and you're apologizing, that's one thing, but if they've already seen a slip up, you know, mm-hmm. it's rough. It's very rough.
Yeah. I really, it's crazy though, because like Zuko has changed so much, even from that scene in Ba Sing Se to now. But I thought it was so interesting that they included those flashbacks to mm-hmm. when Zuko went to the Western Air Temple for the first time. And, you know, his entire demeanor is so different. You could tell there's this pent up anger.
His voice.
His voice is different. Like, he's just so much angrier. And then you see him, like, he had the shaved head with the one little ponytail, mm-hmm. like, not a look, right? And then you see him in the current day where he has his
hair. He's so soft.
So different. And, like, even I think in that flashback, you know, he was thinking of that. And I think there was even a little bit of a him going like, huh, you know, like him like being like ashamed of the way he used to feel about this yeah. entire situation.
I loved that scene because mm-hmm. It's a great way to show his growth as a character. Mm-hmm. And he's like disappointed in himself, you know, and you can also see that Iroh from the beginning was kind of trying to help him, like, you know, we don't know where the Avatar is, like,
yeah, you know, or him just even saying, like, you know, Zuko being like, this is my destiny to capture the Avatar for my honor, and Iroh being like, destiny is a funny thing, like, you yeah. need to be open to the possibilities for your true destiny, like, him knowing, like, this isn't the right way to go about it.
Oh, so. Oh my gosh, of course not. And, like, the poor guy didn't even let his eye heal. You know, he was, like, yeah. on the prowl. He had a Band-Aid on. Like, mm-hmm. it was just... It was very moving to see him so humbled, so soft, coming up to everyone. And it is really scary to go up to people who hate you and try to be a part of this group. But I did mm-hmm. love that we actually see him genuinely smile in this episode.
Yeah, that one little smile that he has. One of my favorite lines is, you know, after he accidentally burns Toph, he just goes, why am I so bad at being good?
Mine too. I was
like very corny, but I still loved it.
I love that too. It was just really funny. So what did you think about Combustion Man coming in?
I thought it was random because I guess the Combustion Man was mad, I guess, at about what happened last time, because like Zuko didn't send him on the chase, right?
Yeah.
Or when Zuko said like stop, like I thought that was a really funny line, like I won't pay you if you stop, like you have to stop or I won't pay you, and then he keeps on doing what he's doing, goes I'll pay you double to stop.
He's trying. He's like, what will get to this guy? Yeah, but wait, I forgot, did Azula talk to Combustion Man after? No, right?
I don't think so. But do you know how Combustion Man actually died? Because when I was watching the episode, I was a little confused. I'm like, did Zuko do it? Like,
yeah,
what?
Zuko did it.
No, so I looked up like what Nickelodeon said. I was like, I need to look into this. And apparently, Sokka's boomerang is the reason why he's actually dead. Because when Sokka hit the boomerang into his third eye, it closed on itself. So when he tried to do some combustion, it like, because it was closed, it combusted himself.
What?
Yeah, I so the boomerang does do good things, let me tell you.
That was a great moment. Like, that was good aim, you know? But the way that it cuts after that and we see Zuko hanging on that thing, like, it makes you think, like, visually, it makes you think that Zuko was involved.
Yeah, well, we know that Zuko tried to stop it. And the only reason why they didn't like they had the chance to throw the boomerang in the first place to like get him to explode was because of Zuko and his effort. So I think like going through that process helped the gang trust him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Which I liked. Did you actually know the fun fact? But did you know that there was a like an there was actually an 8-month hiatus between the Day of Black Sun and this episode?
What?
Yeah.
Why? Like, if you think about it,
like the Day of Black Sun was like kind of like a season finale in a sense. You know what I mean?
Oh.
But there was an 8-month hiatus when this first came out, and then they were trying to figure out like, oh, what's going to happen next? Like fans are like, what's going to happen next? So they had to rename this episode so nothing would be spoiled. And they renamed the episode Zuko's Cool, which I kind of like, instead of the Western Ear Temple, because like Zuko's trying to be cool, trying to get the trust of everyone else.
Oh, that's so, oh my god, yeah, because like honestly it's a two-parter episode, it's midway through the season, like it makes sense, but 8 months, that's a long hiatus.
That's basically a new season, like really, yeah. that this is the beginning of season four,
like, yeah, basically sense. Like that basically, like, was season three, this is season four then, like it's weird that
The tone is so different, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny because I think in the original like series, like the way they were like probably structured the show originally, they were going to have Zuko join the group at the end of book two. So I guess in book two, instead of like going with Azula, it was going to be Zuko going with the gang instead and maybe making that choice at Ba Sing Se. But then they changed it.
They changed it because it gives us more development time for Zuko, and then also helps us understand Azula, helps us understand the Fire Nation more, all of their relationships. And we also wouldn't have learned about Zuko's connection with Aang and the past, I feel like, then.
Yeah, that is true. That is true, because, like, yeah, I guess you could have added it. Maybe that's why they changed it, because they needed more background. Because and I really like the way that Zuko was, like, you know, like, I like the way they made Zuko come to terms with the fact that he's on the wrong side, where he got everything he wanted. He's like, no, this isn't right. Like, you know what I mean? That's the only way, I think.
But I also think hearing about his great-grandfather. Yeah, hearing about his great-grandfather, obviously 100 years, helped him. I think that was like one of those major turning points for him. Mm-hmm. It's like seeing himself in a historical context, because he's a prince. Like part of it is legacy and understanding your legacy. And like, I think seeing that really did help him make this choice. And I also think it's important that he slipped up before, because as a character now, it's like, do we trust him? Do we see it? Like, we understand that he's slipped up before. So I think it adds a good element of tension.
Yeah, I also wonder, like, why didn't Zuko mention that in when he's trying to convince everyone, like, oh, I should help you guys. Like, did you know that I'm actually, like, I'm the great-grandson of the previous Avatar?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that probably could have helped his case in a sense. You know
and also,
what I mean?
Like, why didn't Roku say anything?
Right? Like, he didn't, like, I think if we think about, like, the Avatar and the Fire Lord, they didn't explicitly say, like, why Roku told Aang that story, right?
Yeah.
And at the end of it, I think, it, like, not explicitly, but I think Roku was trying to say, like, hey, like, there are some good Fire Nation people. Like, trust some of them because they'll be your firebending master, right? Because Aang and they don't know that Zuko's great-grandfather is the past Avatar. They still don't know that.
I feel like, I don't know, we did need all of that growth within Zuko. But, yeah, I just have loved how each of these characters have grown. Like, it's really cool. But then, like, they've changed so much. But in the episode, when they're all talking about, like, what should they do next since their original plan failed, and Sokka's like, oh, well, I guess we'll go back to the old plan where you learn firebending. You know, like, it's like so much has changed, but then nothing has changed. And that's just, like, a great feeling to capture in a show, because that's so much like life.
Yeah, and also, like, even seeing, like, I know you mentioned the growth of all these characters, but in a sense, like, Aang is the same as well, where he, in this episode, he's actually kind of running away from, like, what do I do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the Day of Black Sun, he's like, I'm ready to face the Fire Lord. I am going to face him. I'm going to face him. And then the gang is trying to be like, what are we going to do? And he's like, I'm going to explore the temple. Like, bye. Like, you know, like, he's not trying to figure out what he needs to do, because he's running away from his problems, just like he did 100 years ago, in a sense.
How did you feel with the new additions to the cast? Like,
I wanted to mention that. I was really, you know, they had a good out of being like, oh, let's explore the temple. Like, I kind of want a spinoff series with it, like the Duke, Haru, and like the rest of them. I think that would have been fun. That would have been a fun thing. But apparently, the creators of the show, they wanted to actually add some scenes where that subset of the gang is exploring the temple, but they just didn't have time for it.
Yeah, but I would have loved to see that. I want to see what they're up to. I want to see, like, I want to see them a little bit more too, because like we hear, you know, we hear conversations, right? Like, oh, the Western Earth Temple is so different. We hear like, oh, I feel so bad that my dad's back in prison after getting out. Like, you know, they're part of this too. And like, how do they feel? Like, it's.
And I still got to know, why did they decide to give Haru a mustache? Like, we'll never know. And it's I want to know. And another thing we'll never find out, Combustion Man's real name. We still don't know what his real name is.
And like, Zuko almost says it. He's like, oh, that's not his name. And Sokka's like, oh,
what is it? Never answered.
Also, Aang grew taller in this episode. And I will like stand by that. When I was watching it, I was like, whoa. He suddenly looks tall. I wonder if they, I guess they probably have been like making them a little taller when they're drawing
his voice. I also think his voice definitely changed. Like in the headband episodes, like his voice is different. I think that was the episode. I was like, well, is he like, going through puberty? I guess
it's so weird because he definitely looked taller to me in the way that they've drawn him. So I don't know. He's it was a good up. Episode growing up. I just love all these characters. And like, I still get upset that they're redoing the series instead of...
Yeah, I don't want to even think about it. I'm more excited about Paramount Plus creating a new series. I'd rather see that than... Why are we retelling a story that's perfectly done already?
Also, speaking of doing that, it's like literally every reboot is bad. I don't know, the Gossip Girl reboot, as I mentioned last week, horrendous. Like the Sex and the City reboot looks really bad. The only good reboot is the Babysitter's Club reboot, which is a perfect reboot, and it's very hard to do what they did.
I think it's because they didn't feel like they had to do exactly what they did in the past. You know what
I mean?
They
didn't spend so much time explaining the past. Like, it was all subtle references. And it was done in such a way that people who watched the old show could rewatch it with their nieces, nephews, or kids, you know? So
it's just. But like, was it a TV show or was it just a book series?
It was a TV show.
Oh, I thought it was just books. I don't remember.
It was a book series, and then it was a TV show in the 80s and 90s.
Oh. And then I don't think I watched it. I remember reading the books, but I don't remember watching
it. And it's literally a perfect reboot. Like, can't beat it, you know? And it's very, very hard to do.
Also, it's been enough time, too. Like, I get that the show, I guess, is technically 20 years old, but still, it's on Netflix. Like, we remember it, you know? Everyone who's going to watch Avatar, the live action Avatar The Last Airbender has
just all
watched
the show too.
We all just binged the show like 2 years ago. You can't do that. Like, it's not going to work. And like, we already saw what the live action movie looks like, and it was bad.
Like, what are you doing? I don't know.
I'd rather I hope they just create a brand new story. Like, they should have just done the next Avatar The Last Airbender, like the Earth cycle, right?
Yeah,
like the Airbender who's an Earthbender.
I'd rather see something else in the world rather than a remake of this. Like, it's already done. And like, listen, Hollywood, stop.
Okay, stop. Or just like, keep on making series of Avatar The Last Airbender.
I'm done
of
with
Avatar The Last Airbender, but like with brand new characters, because like, you're gonna mess up the characters that we love.
Let's just say, like, I'm done with remakes. We don't need a remake. So I don't know. Anyway, what do you rate the episode?
I think I'm going to give it like a 4.6 or 7. I love this last half of the show. I think this is definitely the beginning of like our season four, you know what I mean? And I just love all these upcoming episodes. They're so much fun. They're a little lighter in a sense until we get to basically the finale. But I just loved it. I thought it was so funny. I loved seeing Zuko's growth. I loved seeing Katara's growth of that, like what she was doing, and I just loved it. What about you?
Same. I think I'm gonna give it like a 4.8. It's just so funny. It's real. I think they just are on the perfect mix of humor, change, like some deeper conversations. My only complaint is I actually wish the episode could be longer to encompass all the characters and like also all the changes in emotion. It feels really rushed in the 20 minutes, but I really wish it was like a 40-minute episode, honestly.
Another two-parter. Just make the rest of them two-parters. Yes, there's a couple of two-parters in the rest. Like, we have Boiling Rock coming up, one of my favorite episodes. But yeah, no, overall, so good. Can't wait for the next episode.
Same.
Which is one of my favorites. I say that at the end of every episode, but the next episode is honestly one of my favorites. So,
well, I guess we'll see you next week. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.